Just as a prelude to our next Bible study series that we're going to be doing. That's too many lights, guys. I can't see my notes. That's better. Everybody can see the screen okay? That should be all right. What we did in Reno, and this just came to me at the end of the Bible study where we were finishing up the Be Ready to Give an Answer series that we're doing here, I suggested to everybody that if you have questions that you have been asked or questions that you have thought about that you think are difficult to answer biblically speaking, or questions about us as a church or something like this that you don't know quite how to answer or you feel uncomfortable answering it, write those questions down, get those to me, and then we will use those questions as our next Bible study series to go continue on with this philosophy of being ready to give an answer. We've got four or five questions from Reno's group already, and they're not easy questions to answer. You have to think about it. But what I'm also going to do is I'm also going to incorporate tools for studying the Bible properly in that next series of this of the Bible studies that we have, and we'll show you how it's an appropriate way to study the Bible to try to come to understand what it actually is saying and what it actually means. Okay, that's just a prelude to the next series. Well, we made it through another onslaught of political campaigning. We all got to watch the slander, the malicious accusations, and the misleading indictments from one party to the next all months long. Daily for the past several weeks in the Sacramento Bee, they had a special section, which I've never seen this before, and it was done in red and yellow, so it really caught your attention. And it was the most malicious lie, the most malicious misleading thing, the most misdirected comment in an advertising campaign, politically speaking. And they talked about it every single day, a new one. And it didn't matter whether it was Republican or Democrat or pro this, pro that. It didn't matter. And they just really got to the heart of it and showed how much lying, how much deceit, and how much maliciousness goes on in these political campaigning. And yes, we've gotten through yet another election. As irritating as that may be, I am so glad when Tuesday finally rolls around during election year. Get all that nonsense behind us. And there's all kinds of discussions going on about all the outcome now and what's going to work, what's not going to work, what it's going to do, what it's not going to do. And, of course, the leader of the pack is saying he's going to veto everything. Turn to Psalm 33, if you would. Psalm 33. Jackie and I recently watched a very interesting movie. The name of the movie was America, Imagine the World Without Her. It is out in DVD now. You can get it at Redbox. You can get it at Netflix. You can get it at most of the other places you can get movies. It's fairly recent. I would highly recommend seeing it if you get the opportunity. It is a it's an interesting perspective on what has happened in America and what the world would be like if some people, many people in this country now, would like to see America and American philosophies destroyed. It is addressing how people are trying to destroy all that America has stood for through the centuries. The author of this documentary, and it is a movie documentary, addresses each accusation, and he really gets pointed with these things, and that's how he starts the movie. And then he shows the proper perspective of where the accusation's coming from and what the actual truth is, and he interviews the leaders of these accusations, the people that are the proponents of these accusations against America. And it's really deep-rooted. Watching that movie, and then also having seen the latest Good News magazine that has red, white, and blue on the cover, the title of the lead article on that magazine, the Good News magazine, is America's War on God. I would strongly recommend, if you don't read many Good News magazine articles, do yourself a favor and read that article. That article and that movie really prompted me to think about a passage of Scripture in the Bible. The passage of Scripture is found in Psalm 33. Psalm 33, and it is in verse 12. Psalm 33 and verse 12. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people he has chosen as his own inheritance. Brethren, we as a nation have been blessed by God for the last several hundred years. But some in our nation don't believe that. As a matter of fact, they despise the thought of God having anything to do with us. And to bring God's name up, even, around some of these people is an irritant. Like I just said, we had some new elections last week. Things might change. Consider what it might be like if sometime in the next week or so you turned on your TV and you started watching the news. And on the newscast, you heard these three reports. Report number one. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court has just issued this statement. Divine providence, which is God, has given to our people the choice of their rulers, and it is the duty as well as the privilege and interest of our Christian nation to select and prefer Christians for their rulers. Think you're going to hear the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court make that statement? What about another statement? Inquiries by our reporters reveal that almost every state legislature has now passed a law requiring all elected officials to take this oath. I do profess faith in God the Father and in the Lord Jesus Christ, his only Son, and I do acknowledge the Holy Scriptures of the Old and New Testaments to be given by divine inspiration. I don't think you'd see too many state legislators taking that oath, do you? Or maybe this statement. Legislation was passed today in Congress to affirm that the Congress of the United States approves of and recommends the Holy Bible for use in the schools. What do you think the response to these announcements would be? Especially by the media in our country, if they had to make them. I'll bet it would be turmoil beyond imagination. I think there would be more of a reaction than we could even begin to imagine. But the amazing thing is, every one of these statements is historically accurate and factual. It was John Jay, the very first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, often called the Father of the Supreme Court, one of the primary writers of the Constitution, who wrote in a letter to then Pennsylvania House of Representative member John Murray. This is what the Supreme Court Chief Justice of the United States wrote to a member of the House of Representatives in the state of Pennsylvania. Real Christians will abstain from violating the rights of others and therefore will not provoke war. Almost all nations have peace or war at the will and pleasure of rulers whom they do not elect and who are not always wise or virtuous. Providence, God, has given to our people the choice of their rulers. And it is the duty as well as the privilege and interest of our Christian nation to select and prefer Christians for their rulers. Actual letter written from John Jay, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, to a House of Representatives member. He also expressed a belief that the moral precepts of Christianity were necessary for good government. He said this in the letter: "No human society, listen to this, no human society has ever been able to maintain both order and freedom, both cohesiveness and liberty, apart from the moral precepts of the Christian religion. Should our republic ever forget this fundamental precept of governance, we will then be surely doomed." That statement was made over 250 years ago. It was the state of Delaware, along with most of the other states, which required office holders to take an oath affirming their Christian faith before they could take office. And not only did Congress in 1782 approve the use of the Bibles in our schools and classrooms, they even paid for them with tax dollars and made sure there was a Bible in every classroom for every student in the country. In 1844, when someone sued to get the Bibles removed from the schools, 1844, this isn't new. When they sued, the Supreme Court ruled this way. We've got to read this. Why should not the Bible, and especially the New Testament, be read and taught as a divine revelation in our schools? Where else can the purest principles of morality be learned so clearly and so perfectly as from the New Testament? That was their response to being sued for putting Bibles in the schools. Just think about this. If these people, who were so instrumental in establishing our nation, were here to say and do these things in our country today, they'd be considered right-wing radicals and wackos. Yet they were the people who put this country together. And they would be considered a serious threat to our nation. I don't think that's a bit of an exaggeration. We, as a nation, have gone a long, long way, haven't we, from where we started. We have diverted so far off the path, it's scary. With Thanksgiving coming up, I thought it might be good to rehearse where we actually came from as a nation. I want to look at 3 points that will help us understand our heritage as Americans. Point number one. America was settled by people looking for religious freedom. The first right thing or thing that America did right is that our earliest settlers were people who came here primarily looking for religious freedom, to practice their Christian beliefs and not be punished for it, not be criticized for it, not be harmed for it. Our other nations around the world, for the most part, came into existence by conquest for selfish and ambitious motives. That was not how this country got started. This nation, the primary motivation was an atmosphere of God, not gold. And America was born. Consider those who sailed on the Mayflower in 1620 as they came looking for freedom in this country. These individuals fled tyranny and oppression. And I don't know how much you remember from high school U.S. History or college U.S. history that you studied. When I got to this kind of stuff in school, I just like, I don't want to listen to this. This stuff's boring. But you want to really get a grasp of what caused these people to hop on these ships and travel thousands of miles across an ocean to nowhere land? They were really an oppressed people. The Mayflower Compact, which is what it's called, which was signed beneath the level of the deck of a swinging lantern in one of the cabins of that ship when they came across the ocean, these individuals, all of them, signed this proclamation that they had come to the New World for this. Quote, for the glory of God in the advancement of our Christian faith. That's why we're coming to this country. In those early colonies, the first public building that was ever erected when they got off a ship was a church. The very first thing they constructed. Anytime there was any difficulty, challenges or different problems within the community, everybody showed up at the church and everybody prayed the same prayer to the same God for the right reasons. And every time there was bountiful and blessings and they had great crops and great harvests, they all gathered together in the church and they all went around the room telling all the wondrous things about how they'd been blessed that last year. No matter which way they were going in their life, they always brought it back to God. They relied on God. They trusted God. They believed in God. And they did it unilaterally as a group. All of the same mind. And what did God do? God blessed them. He blessed this nation more wildly than any nation's ever been blessed on the planet. God was at the center of everything. 20-some years later, in 1643, as more and more people arrived on these shores, they joined together and to form what they called the New England Confederation. They wrote a constitution for this New England Confederation. It was the new first constitution written in the New World, and it began with these words. Whereas we all came into these parts, with one and the same end and aim, namely to advance the kingdom of our Lord Jesus Christ and to enjoy the liberties of the gospel and purity and peace. That was the introduction to their constitution. These are our spiritual forefathers who came to the shores of America so they could worship and practice their Christian faith without fear and without persecution. We don't realize what a blessing it is to be able to meet in peace, to be able to have the prosperity that we've had, to be able to sit in these cushy chairs. We take everything that we've got. I shouldn't say we do. Many of us take everything for granted. Or many things for granted. So the first thing that's right with America is that the earliest settlers came here primarily looking for religious Christian freedom. Let's turn to Exodus chapter 19. Exodus chapter 19. The chapter right before the chapter that has the Ten Commandments in it. The second thing that I think is right with America in the beginning is this. Our founders had a strong desire to be pleasing to God and to do his will. To be pleasing to God and to do his will. There is something at this juncture that is worth noticing, though, historically. As time passed and these settlers got settled in and the original settlers started to die off and many of their descendants, more and more were concerned with increasing their wealth and comfortable living than being faithful to God and his word. And a transition started to take place in this country. As wave after wave of immigrants arrived, because they had heard all these stories about the bountiful blessings of this new land, the resources that were there. So leaders in Britain, leaders in Europe started sending their people over here to ravage the country. They didn't come here for religious freedom. They came here to get wealthy. Entirely different motives than those earlier settlers. England, after some years, began a program in the late 1600s, mid-1600s, of emptying its prisons and putting the prisoners on board ships and sending them as indentured servants to the United States. They sent us all their riffraff. I'm sure they came wanting to serve God. At the same time, the King of England granted vast tracts of land in the New World to his special friends. And slavery was introduced into the colonies to work the plantations. The spiritual atmosphere deteriorated rapidly in this country. Churches were not as full as they once were. Many settlers who had once sought religious freedom now became intolerant of other people. It was during this time that some went off in some very strange spiritual directions. For example, in 1692, a slave girl was brought by her master to live in Salem, Massachusetts. This young black girl grew up in a family that practiced voodoo and Satanism. So she started teaching it to all the other young girls where she was living. It wasn't long until fear filled the community of Salem and the Salem witch trials began. That's what prompted it. Then at about 1730, something happened. Somebody realized something had gone awry. The train was off the track. A spiritual revival of sorts, and many recaptured their roots of Christianity. Benjamin Franklin noted this in a book about 1738 when he wrote this. It was wonderful to see the change so soon made in the manners of our inhabitants. People started going back to their religious beliefs, their Christian foundations, from being thoughtless or indifferent about religion. He was impressed with this. He said, it seemed as if all the world were growing religious again, so that one could not walk through town in an evening without hearing psalms being sung in different families of every street. People started to realize, hey, we missed the boat here. We came over here for the right reason. We got off on the track for the wrong reason. We need to get back on track. In fact, Franklin was so impressed with all this revival taking place and so many people coming back to Christianity that he built an auditorium in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, that could accommodate crowds of more than 30,000 people that came to these meetings. You know what the population of Philadelphia was at the time? 25,000. The auditorium was filled every time they had a meeting. Standing room only. People were coming from everywhere they could possibly come from. They wanted this revival. They wanted to get back on track. They wanted to get their Christian roots reestablished. People were coming from everywhere. Let's look at Exodus 19 now. Exodus 19, and I want to begin here in verse 5. Exodus 19, verse 5. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. It was like our founding fathers listened to these words in Exodus. This great awakening, as it was called, was a precursor to the American Revolution. Our founding fathers, the signers of the Declaration of Independence, and those who wrote our Constitution and Bill of Rights, those who put their lives on the line, who fought and died that this country could be free from tyranny. They lived like that. They believed in that. And they trusted a God to help get them through that. All these grew up and came into this leadership role during this revival period. And they were the leaders of the American Revolution. So the leaders of the nation now had this godly orientation, this Christian foundation, as their premise from which to operate again. Listen to this prayer, recorded in the personal diary of George Washington in his own handwriting. Let my heart, gracious God, be so affected with your glory and majesty that I may discharge those weighty duties which thou requirest of me. Again, I have called on thee for pardon and forgiveness of my sins, for the sacrifice of Jesus Christ offered on the cross for me. Thou gavest thy son to die for me and hast given me assurance of my salvation. Similar to what we heard in the sermonette. From our George Washington, our first president. This was his personal prayer to God. Can you imagine a prayer like this going up by our current president? Or any more recent president? Or any other leader in the world? It's also interesting to note that over a 10-year period of time, starting in the mid-1970s, this is fairly recent, political science professors Donald Lutz and Charles Heineman were at the University of Houston. They collected and cataloged 15,000 writings by the founding fathers, which were produced between the years 1760 and 1805. Their goal was to determine the primary sources of ideas behind the Constitution of the United States by identifying the sources quoted most often in these 15,000 writings. Guess what the primary source was? It was the Holy Bible. As a matter of fact, 94% of the quotes of the founders of our nation were based upon the Bible. When they were quoting facts, when they were quoting statistics, when they were quoting directions, when they were quoting philosophies. They were quoting the Bible. Okay, my last point about what's right about America. Here it is. America was founded by men and women who acknowledged God's supreme rule over men and nations. Let's turn back to the book of Psalms, Psalm 144 this time. Psalm 144. We spent a lot of time in the Psalms and Proverbs last 6 months to a year, and we'll probably spend more time here. It's loaded. Let me point out something, though, about these people back then. They weren't perfect. Again, like was being alluded to in the sermonette. They weren't perfect. They weren't all devout Christians. But they did acknowledge that God was the supreme ruler over man and over nations. They knew that. They understood that. And because they knew that and understood that, that was a motivation behind a lot of the decisions that they made that allowed God to bless them. I hope you grasp what I just said. They believed that God was a supreme ruler over men and nations. And because they believed that, it motivated them to do things that allowed God to bless them. Allowed God. God is always looking for ways to bless us. We can stand in the way of that. In the Declaration of Independence, which I'm sure most of you have either heard or read or have a copy, I have a framed copy in my home. This is what it says. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. What they were saying is, our leadership back then, our forefathers, we want a form of government whose job it is to protect what the Creator has given us. Then, after listing a series of charges against the actions of the King of England, they made two more references to God near the end. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world. These guys took this seriously. George Washington took this seriously. He literally believed God was the supreme judge of the world, the supreme ruler over all of mankind. And nobody has any say in how he runs and how he manages. They were saying that God is the supreme judge of this world. Psalm 144. Remember what we read earlier in Psalm 33. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. Let's read Psalm 144, just one verse here too, verse 15. Psalm 144, verse 15. Happy are the people who are in such a state. Happy are the people whose God is the Lord. These founding fathers got that point. Let's go back to Psalm 33. Psalm 33, a few pages back to your left. Then these individuals that put this Declaration of Independence together ended their document with these words. And for the support of this declaration, a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, that's God, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortune, and our sacred honor. I want you to stop and think back of any picture you've ever seen about that room. There's been pictures, not pictures, I don't think, but there's been sketches and drawings. Many, many men were in this room, weren't there? Dozens. Okay? From every walk of life in this country, but they were the leaders of the country trying to put this Declaration of Independence. They tried to get away from England and the tyranny of England. It's interesting that legend has it that how these men were discussing and debating, putting the words together for the Declaration of Independence before they finalized it. There's a lot of arguing, a lot of debating. They wanted the words to be just right. Finally, one of them suggested that they all get on their knees and ask God what the words should be. Every man in that room dropped to his knees. And they collectively prayed to God for the same reason. And I believe God answered. John Adams, who was in the room that day, wrote this letter to his wife, Abigail, about that meeting of the First Continental Congress. He said this to his wife: "The most amazing thing occurred. Even the stern old Quakers had tears gushing out of their cheeks. They let God get to their hearts. They asked God to get to their hearts." Can you imagine doing that today? Wouldn't it be wonderful today if our president, our Congress, our Supreme Court, if they would get down on their knees like the forefathers did and say, "God, what do you want for this nation?" I found it also interesting that at the signing of the Declaration of Independence, Samuel Adams, who was there, often called the father of the Revolution, declared this: "We have this day restored the sovereign God to whom all men ought to be obedient." We were getting off track again. We all wanted our own will. We all wanted what we wanted in there. We finally dropped to our knees, went to God and said, "God, what do you want in here?" And John Adams writes, "He reigns in heaven, and from the rising of the setting of the sun, let his kingdom come." Now, that's a pretty powerful statement from one of our early political leaders in this country. As we get ready to close, I want to end where I began. I began in Psalm 33, if you will recall. Let's pick it up again in Psalm 33 and verse 12, where we began, but I want to go a little bit farther and see this power in God that our forefathers believed in. Psalm 33, verse 12. "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people he has chosen as his own inheritance. The Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men. From the place of his dwelling, he looks on all the inhabitants of the earth. He fashions their hearts individually. He considers all their works." He's watching every moment because he cares, because he loves us. "No king is saved by the multitude of an army." It doesn't happen that way. "A mighty man is not delivered by great strength. A horse is a vain hope for safety. Neither shall it deliver any of it by its great strength. Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, on those who hope in his mercy, to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine. Our soul waits for the Lord. He is our help and he is our shield. For our heart shall rejoice in him because we have trusted in his holy name. Let your mercy, O Lord, be upon us just as we hope in you." Oh, if we individually and as a nation could come to internalize these words about the majesty of God. What might happen, keeping in mind that God has blessed America in the past? Could he do it again? Would he do it again? I believe in my heart that if our leadership dropped to their knees and asked God for direction, God would give it. Go to 1 Peter 2 before we close. 1 Peter chapter 2. Let me leave you with a little tidbit of history, though. Do you know what the tallest structure in Washington, D.C. is? It's the Washington Monument. Now, that might not seem too fascinating of and by itself. It's the Washington Monument, and by law, nothing taller than the Washington Monument can be built in Washington, D.C. And do you know what is inscribed at the pinnacle of the Washington Monument? That little peak right at the top? What is inscribed up there are these words in Latin: "Let God be praised." There may be legislators who don't know that. There may be presidents who don't know that. There may be Supreme Court justices who do not know that. But at the very top, the pinnacle of our nation's capital, are these words: "Let God be praised." Oh, if America could just lift up her eyes and praise God for the greatness and the blessings that this country has received under his blessings. Now, 1 Peter 2. "Brethren, we have been given an incredible blessing of having lived here in the United States of America, which God has blessed for hundreds of years. And that blessing can be used by us for our ultimate purpose." Pick it up in 1 Peter 2, verse 1. 1 Peter 2, 1. "Therefore, laying aside all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking, as newborn babes, desire the pure milk of the word, that you may grow thereby. If indeed you have tasted that the Lord is gracious, coming to him as to a living stone, rejected indeed by men, but chosen by God and precious," talking about Christ, "you also, as living stones, are being built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ." Drop down to verse 9. "But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, who once were not a people, but are now the people of God, who had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy." Brethren, God blessed America for a reason. And marvelous things happened when our forefathers recognized his sovereignty and his power over all men. We need to recognize that sovereignty and that power in our lives. It exists. And the same things can happen. When we do, be prepared to watch the mighty hand of God go to work in your life. Have a great Sabbath.